Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
G'day. Welcome to High Resolution. I'm Chris Button, Biteside content producer. Rogue Legacy walked so Hades could run. Now, nearly 10 years after the original, Rogue Legacy 2 is another shiny example of the highly replayable roguelike genre. Today, I'm joined by Cellador Games co-founder and designer Teddy Lee to detail the tricky path to capturing success a second time. From finding popularity with Rogue Legacy, the commercial struggles of the studio's follow-up in Full Metal Furies, to the surprisingly emotional early access journey of Rogue Legacy 2, Teddy explains it all. Also, there's a little discussion about the studio's early Flash games, including Don't Shit Your Pants, a game we've all played IRL at some point in our lives. We start our chat talking about what got Teddy into the games industry.
Yeah, I mean, more or less, like, when I was, like, super young, like, six or so, I knew that I wanted to get into game development, like, since then. It was just something that really clicked with me. And, like, ever since then, I was just, like, always directing myself to, like, how do we get into games, how to get into games on the education front. So it was never something I really had to like, find my way into, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah, out of curiosity, because I know here in Australia there are a few pathways to game development and some formal courses and different forms of education one can go through to get through to the industry. What pathways are there in Canada? Are there many places that you can go to learn game development, or is it more of you learn by doing and trying?
So when I was growing, I'm pretty old now, but when I was growing up, the only way to get in was like either through programming, right? Like that's the way for everybody, or to get into DigiPen. And like, so I tried to get into DigiPen, but it was actually really, really hard. Like the grades are pretty high. And it also cost a ridiculous amount of money. Like even if I got in, it would have been too expensive. So I just started making games on the side and then went into programming, or I tried to get into programming since that was like really my only way in. And even though I have like some kind of weird degree in university, it didn't help. I can't program. Like I'm the worst programmer. It's like absolutely against me. But I kept making games when I was a kid, and that's actually how I got my first job, which was at like this children's game company called Webkinz. I was like one of the few applicants who had like demos and stuff, which put me like way ahead of everybody else, which was like super helpful. They didn't even look at my university degree. Like they didn't care. They were just like, oh, you've made games and you've got like this portfolio. And then that's how I got in at the start.
And what game, whether one that you've worked on or one that you've played, has had the most influence on your career to date?
I guess the first ones would probably be the all the adventure games I played as a kid, like King's Quest and stuff. Because like, my entire family was obsessed with them, so we played like all of them. And when I was working at that Webkinz, we decided, me and my brother, to just make a Flash game on the side, like on our own, and that was Don't Shit Your Pants, which was like this Flash game from way long ago. And it went super viral, and that totally cemented us doing our side projects. Me and my brother were going like, okay, well, we can do this. We can make games. We weren't making it for money. we were just making it, like, because people liked it. And, you know, it just kept going and going and going. So when we switched over to, like, Rogue Legacy and stuff, like switching over to actual, like, hey, can we get some money for these games now? It was actually, like, we had so much experience by then, right? Like, a lot of people go, oh, Rogue Legacy is our first game. But no, it's, like, our fifth or sixth at this point. So, yeah, a huge part of that was just because of the adventure games. But then for Rogue Legacy, I would actually say the biggest one was Dungeons of Dreadmoor, which is this weird game. Nobody's heard of it. It's a roguelike. And when we were making Rogue Legacy, before it was going to be a Metroidvania, and it was just too expensive, right? So we were like, oh, man, we went in over our heads. I was playing Dungeons of Dreadmoor, which is a roguelike, and I've never actually played the genre before then. And I was like, oh, hey, this is really cool. We could probably convert what we've got right now into a roguelike and save on, which was our biggest bottleneck at the time, which was art, right? Because when it's procedural, people don't really care. Like, you know, you're going to custom areas. And, like, that completely pivoted the project, which, you know, led to Rogue Legacy and everything. So, those two.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you did come across Dungeons of Dreadmoor, and as you say, working on Rogue Legacy and making that pivot to a more of a procedural generation roguelike sort of structure, how much of a pivot was that? Did that require much reworking to what you already had to sort of fit the new direction?
Luckily, not. Because, like, the way it works for me and my brother, that when he makes the engine, he makes the tools and everything. So, like, when I'm using them, I have a general idea of where we can pivot to, right? So, like, we thought it up. We knew what we had built, which was, like, the big portion of what we had finished was a level editor, which was just, you know, creating rooms, and then you could connect them together, right? So I was like, okay, so how hard would it be, instead of, you know, connecting A to B to C every single time, to do A to some random number to some random number to some random number? And I think Kenny, who my brother, was like, did it in about 2 weeks. Like, it was rough, but he did it in 2 weeks because, like, we already kind of knew how the stuff worked. So it wasn't like this massive scrap everything. We never do that. We try never to scrap, like, major stuff like that. So we knew that we could pivot pretty easily on that, which was lucky because, yeah, the level editor was great. We built 360 or some 600 something rooms, right? So we knew that it was fast. So we were just, like, leaning into what the level editor could do.
Yeah, and when Rogue Legacy did launch, and I know it then launched on subsequent platforms in the following years, what was the reception and reaction? Because I know the critical reaction was quite warm to Rogue Legacy. What was the reception with the general public?
It was super positive. It was super positive. Like, people really liked it. It was kind of like a gateway game to other roguelikes, because roguelikes weren't, like, popular yet. They hadn't gone in popular, like, exploded. And they were all extremely difficult, like, right off the bat. Like, Spelunky and Binding of Isaac, I think, were the only other two, I think. Like, they were, and then you got all, like, the, you know, the Dwarf Fortress and stuff, which was super duper hard. And so we already always knew that, like, Rogue Legacy was kind of the gateway into it, right? Like, just the simplified version. It's kind of weird. It's always the same. It's like the reaction is super positive. It's super positive. And then people go more hardcore and they're like, oh, well, now I don't like this portion of Rogue Legacy because it's too childish or it's too kiddish. And I was like, oh, whatever. I don't mind.
Well, that's one thing about Celador Games' sort of catalog in general, is that there is this whimsical sense of humor and a little bit of a mix of highbrow and lowbrow humor. I mean, it's right there off the bat with, you know, the original Flash games with Don't Shit Your Pants. Throughout Rogue Legacy, Full Metal Furies, there's all sorts of you know, lots of jokes and humor and lots of color text as well. How would you describe your sense of humor, or what influenced this sense of humor? Because it's something that seems so effortless when you play the game, that the games from Celador Games are just effortlessly funny.
Well, it's not easy. we write a lot of our jokes. I just like to write, I like to write the jokes. Or I guess we have like a high amount of, like one-liners and stuff. Just because, whenever I'm writing in anything, like descriptions and everything, if I find it boring, right, to write, then I feel like the audience will find it boring to read. So we always try to, we always just end up like, you know, trying to put in as many jokes as possible. I've tried to reduce it. You know, just like, oh, this is a serious moment, and so let's get serious. And it's definitely difficult. But yeah, no, it's just something that we just write. I think people would be surprised at how much we edit our work for these stupid jokes.
Yeah, of course. But then there's always room for, like, the very famous trait system in the Rogue Legacy games for, you know, traits like IBS, which quite literally give your hero the superpower of farting, which I just think is wonderful.
Yeah, it's just lowbrow humor. That's just stuff we like.
So then following Rogue Legacy was a bit of a departure that still retains some of that roguelite core with Full Metal Furies, which was this very clever hybrid puzzle brawler game. And what sort of led or connected Rogue Legacy to Full Metal Furies? How did that game come about?
It came about because my brother wanted to make a brawler. And so we were like, okay, well, let's just make a brawler. I will say that I still think to this day, I think he wouldn't even consider it a brawler at this point because it kind of veered so far away. But that's generally how we do a lot of our projects. We just go, oh, let's work in a genre, and then we put our own spin on it. The only thing we haven't done, I think we've done a lot of games. We've done like adventure and shmups and roguelikes and brawlers and everything, is that we usually only work in genres we don't like, which is kind of a weird thing. But it's like, I also feel like when you work in a genre you don't like, you're willing to put more to the table, so they become a little more distinct. It would be kind of neat, I think, one day to work on a genre we actually enjoy. But yeah, there's really no rhyme nor reason to how FMF came about. It was literally just, let's make a brawler. And then we went, okay, and just started on day one.
That's a fascinating way to approach game development, by tackling genres that you don't traditionally like and bringing elements to it that you perhaps would like to play. So what are some genres that you would like to tackle then? What are genres that you typically do enjoy or would enjoy playing outside of games that you develop?
I don't know. I like MOBAs, but that's not something we'll ever make, because that's like a million trillion hours and dollars. But it would be cool to make like a MOBA character, I guess. But honestly, I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot. I feel like a lot of genres are pretty stagnant. I do want to make a, I did want to make, I should say, for the longest time, a turn-based strategy game, because I felt like those, especially like the XCOM style games, are really, really stagnant. But then Into the Breach came around, and I was just like, yeah, they kind of knocked it out of the park. So it's like, now I lost interest in that genre because I like it now.
Yeah. So then coming back to Full Metal Furies, I recall playing that at launch and really, really enjoying, again, as you say, some of those elements that were very much a departure from traditional brawler territory. But I do recall reading at the time this rather heartbreaking interview with Destructoid, where I know at the time, shortly after launch, the team did consider a bit of a failure not long after launch, because it just failed to connect with an audience. But I do recall reading since that it did find quite a strong Korean following. So with a bit of distance now between the release of Full Metal Furies and now. What are your feelings and thoughts on Full Metal Furies overall? Because I know from what I've read that you believe it to be a good game that just didn't quite connect with audiences. So how has it gone since, and how do you feel about the game?
I still really like Full Metal Furies. I think it's like an awesome game. Would I make it again? Probably not. it did help me a lot, learn a lot regarding pacing and, I guess, genre bending or genre mixing.
Mm.
I mean, it's hard to say. I really like the game. I think it did a lot. I also think out of all of the games we've released, it's made probably some of the biggest mistakes. And it was also a huge learning lesson in like biting off more than you could chew, because we added online multiplayer to that game, and it just, the cascading effects that had on development and costs is like unbelievable. It's hard to say, it's been so long. It's so long for us, at least.
When did you first notice that Full Metal Furies had picked up a following in Korea?
Oh, through Twitter. Just people started enjoying it and talking about it and in Korean, and then they contacted us, and yeah, it just kind of like grew from there. It's nothing like super, like Full Metal Furies broke even. It took a while, but it broke even, so I'm super grateful for that. But yeah, it was just really just them, people in Korea is talking about it on Twitter and really liking the game. Really liking the writing, which makes me think, thank gosh, because there's probably something lost in translation, which makes them appreciate it more than how it was written in English. But no. Yeah, it was just... this thing that just kind of grew, and they contacted us. They wanted to write a translation, and then that translation got more fans, and then it like just kept like kind of just slowly growing from there.
So then, with Rogue Legacy 2 opting for the early access route to development, at what point did you decide that you would work on a Rogue Legacy sequel? Was that something that you had in mind from the very beginning after finishing the first one, or did your work on Full Metal Furies inform that at all?
No. We wanted to make Rogue Legacy 2 for a while. I just didn't want to do it right away, right? Hmm. To, like, be super tired. And Full Metal Furies expedited a little, right? Because we kind of were like, uh-oh, we got to start on Project 3, right? Because it didn't make any money. Yeah, we always had plans, and there were so many things we wanted to fix when we launched Rogue Legacy 1. Like, people sometimes, like, especially nowadays, like, people keep comparing us, like, oh, compared to game XYZ, like, Rogue Legacy is really showing its age and stuff. And I'm like, dude, you know, game XYZ had a team that's 15 times larger than us, right? And they took 3 years, and we spent a year and a half, most of it part-time. Like, that game was really, really, like, it had no budget, right? We were making it off of our whatever we had saved from our, you know, regular low-paying jobs. So it's just weird. But, so when we went to Rogue Legacy 2, there were a lot of things we wanted to change. And another thing, big reason we wanted to do the sequel is because we wanted to switch to Unity. And we don't have any experience with Unity. And working on a pre-existing IP, right, where a lot of the roadmap doesn't have to be discovered, just is really helpful, which was also why we went to early access, because we always wanted to kind of try it, you know, kind of dabble in it. Doing it with a sequel is just a lot safer as well. So there was a huge amount of reasons to do Rogue Legacy 2 when we did it.
Yeah. What were some of those things you wanted to address from the original Rogue Legacy in Rogue Legacy 2?
So the two biggest things that like really annoyed me was one, the traits, right? I mean that was, we actually like in Rogue Legacy 1 you get 30% more gold for Vertigo.
Mm.
So like we already had that idea, but just because of the way we coded things, because you know you're making the game on the fly, we couldn't retroactively add it to everything. It was like way too difficult. So that was like number one. I was like, okay, we got to put in gold. We got to do this so that trait always stays interesting. There was a ton of traits we didn't really like either. The other major thing that I always wanted to tackle, and this is just more like behind the scenes, was the so in Rogue Legacy 1, the only way to get double jump and dash was through runes, right? Like you can equip these runes and put them all on. But one of these rules we have, like whenever we make games, is like you have to be able to beat a boss or a stage without taking damage with the most basic character possible, right? So that meant for Rogue Legacy 1, I played the entire game without dash and without double jump. And that really kind of really like stagnates the complexities you can add to the game, right? So I knew like, okay, when Rogue Legacy 2 came about, that's what why the heirloom system came. Right, people are like, oh, why did you put an heirloom? Why is dash an heirloom now? Like the whole reason is so that we can still stay true to like, you know, our design philosophies of saying, okay, I now know I will have dash and I will have double jump. So now I can make, you know, bosses and encounters that much more interesting. So that was like the second major thing. And then the third major thing, and this thing was so annoying, was our relic system. So, you know, in Rogue Legacy 1, the relic system was super, super bare. And you could only equip one at a time. And I was like, oh, we should change it so you can just equip multiple. But we couldn't do that at that point because relics went into an inventory and the inventory was of size one. And it was like be so much work and we only had like five relics, so it didn't really matter. So when you like we rehauled that completely when the sequel came along. So those were like the three core things we knew we were going to change on day one.
With going for the early access path, firstly, what inspired the decision to go for early access with Rogue Legacy 2?
We just wanted to try it. that's really it. We're just like, we'll try it. If we like it, we'll do it for future projects. If we can't stand it or whatever, then we'll just, you know, put it on the wayside. That was literally it.
Fair enough. I mean, that's as good a reason as any. It's interesting because I did read a very good article on Digital Trends where you discussed the sort of surprising emotional roller coaster of the early access journey of Rogue Legacy 2 in terms of putting work out there for people to give feedback on and react to that. So what were some of the biggest pieces of feedback that shaped Rogue Legacy 2 going forward?
There was a lot of things that happened. Well, I guess the first thing I would say to anybody who wants to make an early access game is you should launch with like 75% of the game done. We don't play early access games. So we were like, oh, let's make an early access game. So we're like, well, did any of us here play any? And none of us have. So we kind of went in blind, which is so dumb. But that's what we did. So we launched with like 20% of the content because we're like, yeah, that's how you make an early access game, right? You get the engine and all the stuff working so that when you're making changes, the community can have as much of an impact as possible. And that totally backfired on us. So when we actually launched in early access, it was a very difficult time, to say the least. We launched, it did well, but then immediately everybody was like, oh, this is like a pump and dump, right? They're like, this is the most low effort project I've ever seen. There's only like one boss, right? And then we just got absolutely hammered, which was like super scary. We were just like, oh man, we really should have played some early access games. But yeah, aside from that, like when we actually got into it, cause like the first 5 or 6 months, we were just like heads down crunching to get content out, right? But yeah, after that, it was actually really good. We'd gotten feedback from like Supergiant on how to work with the community and stuff, which was super helpful. And one thing we did, this was actually like accidental. People were just like, oh, like what are your goals, right? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, well, these are our goals, right? I just like said it in Discord. And then somebody pinned it. I don't even know how to use Discord, but somebody in the community pinned it. So then whenever something wasn't happening, so like one of the things we said was like, we wanted every single boss to be beatable without getting hit with any of the all of the basic weapons in the game, right? And then they're like, oh, but you can't beat it with the weird fabled weapon, like the spoon or the ballistic bow, which is a bow you can only shoot on the ground. And we're like, well, you know, that game wasn't made for that. But then they kept not pestering us. They kept requesting, right? And that just led to a lot of balance tweaks to make things super viable, which was a lot of work, but super helpful for us in the end, which is why I feel like a lot of the classes, if you go online, a lot of people have different favorites, and there's no way we would have gotten there without the ridiculous amount of community feedback that we had gotten through early access. And they brought over their resolve system, which is this huge thing. Originally, the relics took away a percentage of your health, a tiny percent, right? And we're like, oh, we'll just, they didn't, nobody liked it, so we kept lowering the cost. And then nobody liked it still. Even if it only took away 10 HP, nobody would like it. So it's all of these things, which we were like, yeah, it's a number thing. The community really helped us go, okay, no, it's something that we need to reimagine from the ground up and tweak it. So they led to the resolve system. They led to a few of the classes. The katana, the samurai's katana is from the community inspired, because they wanted an eldritch monster. And we tried to make it, but it didn't work. And then, you know, just kind of looped around to that. And they also led to the skill crit system, which I'm super happy with. That actually came about because crits kind of broke. Crits were just standard crits, and they broke in the game. And then they brought up that stupid thing, that pinned comment. They're like, you said every build should be viable, but only crits viable at the end. And I was like, God, why did I post this? No, but it was good. It was good. Those things, the community keeping us, you know, on track really, really helped make the Rogue Legacy the way it was.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Great. And one thing stood out there from what you mentioned, Teddy, that I'm interested to delve a little deeper on. You mentioned that Supergiant provided a little bit of feedback on the early access process. Can you share what some of that feedback was from the Supergiant folks?
Well, they're awesome. They're awesome. And they just contacted us out of the blue going, oh, hey, do you need any help? And offering advice and things like that. So one was a community feedback, right? They were like, you want a general community, which is super helpful. But when it comes to getting more detailed feedback or playtesting the game, which has been unbelievably helpful for us because we have a lot of bugs. they're like, you want to find, 15 or 20 people and build a special community with them. We did that. And it was unbelievably beneficial, unbelievably beneficial. And they're awesome people too, which was we were oh man, what if nobody's there? And they're like, no, you'll get people, you'll get people. And it was just a lot of and also a lot of just encouragement from them, which has been really great, right? Because we don't know about certain things. They will say oh, our numbers are pretty bad. And they're like, no, your numbers are fine. And stuff like that, right? Just because you don't have it's really hard to gauge your progress in early access, right? Because the numbers are vastly different from what you get when you launch a title. But yeah, so like all of their feedback, all of their advice, like they really helped us stop us from going, okay, let's gut the budget, because like Rogue Legacy 2 might not make it, right? So super grateful to them on that stuff too.
Yeah, and with the early access process, getting the feedback and the testing on the classes, as you said, was very, very valuable. And for anyone who hasn't played Rogue Legacy 2 but may have played the first one, one of the biggest differences between the two is how the classes play in terms of how unique they play. They all play in a very unique way with their own weapon set, their own abilities, and that sort of thing. And there's such a variety as well to the way they play between the knight, barbarian, mage, ranger, and so on. What was the process for designing each of these classes to be so unique from one another?
I don't know. Sorry, I mean, it's like the same way we made our characters in FMF is it's just they have to be distinct, they have to do something different, like that's one of the core rules, but the hardest part is that they have to still be fun. Right, so like, yeah, we can make anything, but if it's not like interesting to press the attack button, then it gets scrapped, which actually is severely limiting in what you can actually do. But yeah, honestly, it's just kind of like a crapshoot. It's difficult to say because it's purely just, you know, going off of what you think would work and then trying to go for that. Or it's just going like, we just asked the team, hey, guys, what would you like in the game? Right? And so our art director, Matt Hamill, was like, oh, I would like to be a chef. Right. So then we were just like, okay, well, let's just try to get a chef working. And that actually took quite a while. That was pretty hard to do. But like, it was just like, I'm more interested in the challenge. Right. So like, that was always fun. Sean, our art lead, wanted to do the bard. That one was difficult. But I like the bard. I think the bard's awesome. And like, yeah, it's just a bunch of that. It's just a bunch of, yeah. All the characters I designed are the plain ones. the stereotypical ones. It's just winging it, honestly.
Do you have a particular favorite class that you like playing as?
I like the knight, because I'm like the best at the knight. I put like the most hours into him. He's the base for playtesting. But my favorite to play as is probably the ranger and the boxer, because they're really fun. They're really weird. I also like the Ronin a lot, just because he's like super fast. But yeah, I like them all. I think the duelist is OP. I don't want to nerf him though. But yeah, if you get the chance to practice the ranger, he can get really, really wild. His talent is like the most, you can do a lot of crazy things with it. So I always enjoy playing as a ranger.
Were there any ideas for classes that were particularly challenging to implement, or were there any that you had to scrap because they didn't work?
We had a lich. He didn't get scrapped. We had a bunch of classes where like, we have to bring him in. They're the most popular from Rogue. The lich was one. He didn't get scrapped, but he got turned into the astromancer at the end. The bard was really hard to design. The bard and the pirate took the longest to design by a fair margin. We had to scrap quasi-scrapped once again the Eldritch. He didn't even really get far. The only thing that was like designed and it was on paper was his weapon attack. And that actually got put onto the Ronin because it was like a better fit for the Ronin. The Ronin actually used to have this really dumb attack. And then that got changed. We scrapped the ninja. There was a ninja class. His weapon was just too janky. But I really would like to turn it into a Fabled weapon down the road, just because it's like 85% of the way there. But yeah, he got scrapped and just got turned into the assassin.
Yeah, and as you say, you want to potentially look at adding Fabled weapons down the track and that sort of thing. How has the reaction and how has Rogue Legacy 2 performed or done since exiting early access recently?
It did really well. It did way better than we were expecting. Like, we're super, super happy with the sales for Rogue Legacy 2. Like, it did awesome. It was definitely scary. We'd done a bunch of, like, research and analysis into numbers, and we were tracking a bunch of stuff. And we were like, oh, yeah, it should do well. But, like, we had, like, this fear of FMF where we had some tracking, and we knew FMF, when it was going to launch, wasn't going to do that well, right? But it also, like, did way below what we were, like, even our worst estimates. So we were always like, okay, it doesn't really matter all these analytics. Rogue Legacy 2 could just completely tank and come out of the gates with, like, you know, like in the bottom 100 right off the bat. So that was like, it was a super stressful time, super stressful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when it came out and it did well, it was like, yeah, it was cloud nine. It was really great. It was super relieving.
Fantastic. And what are your future plans for Rogue Legacy 2 and Celador Games going ahead?
So we have to do some updates to the game. We have one really, well, stuff, because we don't want to promise anything, but there's been one huge update. We really wanted it in during launch. It was just absolutely not possible. We still don't even know if it's actually possible, like, to do. But that would be our first major update, and it's going to be huge if we can get it in. But once again, I don't know if we can get it in, just because it changes a lot about the game. Or at least, like, from our end, from the engine side, it changes a lot. But it'd be really awesome to do that. We're still not sure. We're probably going to do, a minor update, because I do want to add some Fabled weapons and possibly some spells and relics, right? Because those are relatively cheap. Relics, not so much. They add a million bugs. But spells and weapons are actually surprisingly, like, a little cheaper than those. But then we'd want to do the update, which we can't really talk about, just in case, because I don't want to break promises if we can't do it. And then it's a bunch of optimization work. This is going to be weird because we've never actually had a team before. I mean, Celador Games has been entirely contract, right? It's me, my brother, and a lot of contract workers who we work, like, practically full-time with. But now we have full-time employees, which is awesome. They're great. But it's like, what do we do for our next project? We've never done this with a team before. So it's an uncharted territory for us.
Yeah. How big is the team at the moment?
Full-time, it's like 4.5. So it's me, my brother, Caleb, the programmer, and Sean, a technical artist. And then 0.5 is Matt, the art director, because he's a kid, right? So he's like, oh, I want to spend time. And we don't want to push him and make him lose, like, out on his kids' birthdays and stuff. So pretty small team, but that's actually, like, full-time.
One thing I'm keen to get your thoughts on, and we touched a little bit on this earlier when you were saying getting feedback on, say, like, the original Rogue Legacy, where some people have said, oh, you know, XYZ game has come out since and does this. I know between the original Rogue Legacy and now the full release of Rogue Legacy 2, there have been a number of really great roguelikes and roguelite games, including Dead Cells, Hades, and a bunch of other really great games as well. Have you paid much attention to those games in the time in between Rogue Legacies, and have you noticed much of a change or a shift in the genre during that time?
Honestly, I don't really play a lot of roguelikes. And when I do, like, I did play Dead Cells, I did play Enter the Gungeon, and I did play Hades. Hades probably the most. I usually quit after I beat them once, which you're not supposed to do for the genre. But yeah, there was a lot that I kind of just, you know, you just get through like osmosis as you play them.
Mm.
I do think they're going in a, I wouldn't say they are going. They're very much splitting in genres. But yeah, I usually don't take a lot from like what I like, right? Because I'm more of a negative, I guess, energy person. I just see things that I don't like, and then I kind of want to design in that direction, right? So like a general problem, and this is a big problem. It's hard. It's hard for anybody to solve. It's what I call time burners, right? So like if you play all those games, usually the first two or three worlds or floors or however they're structured, they're really easy, right? And you're just kind of doing them to get your character powerful and to find out how your character is changing. And that's why I can't really stand them. Not stand them. That's why I don't really find myself super invested into roguelikes. It's just because it's like, oh, I don't want to waste 20 minutes before I get to fight this boss again. Or, you know, I don't want to waste, you know, 50 minutes in order to see this new room or see how the enemies attack me. So that was one of the big things that directed Rogue Legacy 2, right, was this concept. That's why it's like when we added relics, I knew from a design perspective, we needed to put in some type of trade-off to them, which is why we had health in the beginning. Because if you don't have that, then Rogue Legacy, you know, we put in all this effort for it to be kind more or less a Metroidvania with roguelike mechanics, is what I would like say it as. It would just become every other roguelike, where you'd have to do every single floor, even if the bosses aren't there, because you have to pick up as many relics as possible, because everybody's expecting that on your power curve, right? And that changed the equipment system, that changed, added to the resolve system, and so forth and so forth. And it's kind of those like just like ephemeral, I guess, design issues, which helped Rogue Legacy 2.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying about how you have a tendency to develop in genres that you traditionally don't like or don't play or want to address certain shortcomings you perceive in other genres. And I think even with the original Rogue Legacy, it had elements of this, and this continued in Rogue Legacy 2, the portal system in being able to, or Rogue Legacy 2 in particular, being able to unlock portals permanently so you could skip some of those early areas once you'd cleared them. It seemed like a pretty natural way of subverting that early world or early area grind to jump straight into the next area that you wanted to challenge or try and take the boss or the area on. Is that one of the methods that you would see as addressing that aspect of some roguelikes you don't like?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, one of the, I mean, it's a portal system, so it's not like, but like to give credit where it's due, a game that I did play, I can't remember the game, but you're like this underminer or something. It's a roguelike where you dig, and they actually put in that similar system where you go down six floors, but if you want, you could just unlock a teleporter and they'll teleport you down six floors and then give you like 12 random relics to help speed it up, right? Which I really appreciated. So that was definitely like, once again, like these kind of changes, which I play and just help inspire the direction that we want to go in with our games.
Is there anything else you would like to mention about Rogue Legacy 2 or anything that we haven't discussed that you'd like to bring up?
Oh, the burden system was super heavily inspired by Hades. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I just wanted to throw that out. I guess like one thing, just a minor thing, is everybody keeps calling it a grind game. That just makes me so sad. Just because we put a lot of effort to make sure you can beat it at level one. But I like hard games, right? And the whole point of this RPG mechanic is to let people of all skill levels be able to beat the game, right? But like a grind game is a game if damage is unavoidable, You know what I mean? Like a turn-based RPG, those are grind games because eventually you reach a stat cap, and it's just like, it's just, this is a skill game, guys. You know, if you can dodge all the attacks, you can beat them. I've beaten them, right? That's one of our rules, and it just drives me crazy. That's it. Never mind. I'm defending myself on a podcast.
You're preaching to the converted there, because while I certainly do find the Rogue Legacy games challenging, I feel that every mistake is totally on me. I know that when I take damage, it is entirely my fault, and I make mistakes quite regularly, but that's just the nature of the game. But that's really interesting. And is that something that perhaps you've seen with speedrunners? Have you seen any or many no-hit speedruns yet of Rogue Legacy 2?
So that's the interesting thing. When it comes to speedruns, I've seen people beat the game at level 1, right? Like, I don't think they just reload if they're going to die, right? But like, they beat it at level 1. Nobody's done a no hit yet. I mean, somebody did a no hit, or not a no hit. Somebody did a full level 1 run of Rogue Legacy 1, right? But that, even though it's like 25 minutes, it took like 5 years before somebody did it. Just because it's like,
oh wow,
extremely difficult to do. But yeah, for speedrunners, because I've watched a lot of them, I wouldn't say unfortunately, but like, it's just the case. It's like, you know, they'll beat like 3 or 4 bosses and then they'll kill themselves, just because at that point it would be way faster to get like a short time if they pick a new character and then put in like, you know, 32 points into strength versus the 20,000 gold they've accumulated, right? So yeah, I don't think there is a speed run level 1, because that would actually be very difficult to do. Like, yeah, and not fast.
Fair enough. One question I like to close out with guests on High Resolution is, why should people care about video games?
Because they're, well, I think they're the most interesting form of pastime that you could be enjoying, and because they make you smarter, or at least that's what the studies show. So yeah, you should be just doing it for health reasons.
That sounds as good a reason as any to me. Play video games for your health.
It's a terrible reason.
Yeah.
I play it for fun. I just play them for fun.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.